Welcome to this next lecture on virtual machines. We have reached the backtrack point. So what is a backtrack point? So this is a call of a clause where why did we call a clause? We wanted to prove a literal, which is can be considered as a query to a predicate, and we try to prove this query by means of a clause. Now, in principle, the call of this clause is implemented like a procedure call. Now, but the proving by means of this clause may fail, and that means we then have perhaps made a wrong choice when proving this literal, and we should have chosen another alternative. Now, in order to be able to switch from one alternative to the other, we install a backtrack point. And that here is one, and this installing a backtrack point means that the stack frame, which we install for that call, contains all relevant information for handling these procedure calls. And therefore, here we kind of decided that besides those entries in the section of organizational cells, which are kind of familiar to us, namely, that was kind of not the right mark. I think I should have said. So these two entries are kind of familiar to us. So the positive continuation address, which says for a procedure call where to continue once the procedure call has terminated, and FP old means this the kind of the caller, identifies the caller. So that's fine, so that we will have also. But now additionally we add precautions for the case that this choice of a clause, that this chosen alternative may be the wrong one and should be replaced by another alternative. And in order to do that, we added these four additional organizational memory cells. So once again, what are these extra memory cells? So the first and most important perhaps is the negative continuation address. So this is the code where we could find the next alternative. Yeah? So this next alternative we should try when the first alternative failed. So this is this. Then beyond that, we have also to undo the effect which the wrong alternative has effected. Yeah? And that is, for that we have these HP old and TP old. HP old is the old heap pointer. So the goal is that everything which has been allocated between this point of before choosing the wrong alternative and now, everything in between should be popped off the stack, popped off the heap. Yeah. So that is the first goal. And the second thing is that there could be variables below this new section which are popped off, but we still are modified, so because there could be bindings from those variables those old variables, so to speak, which must be undone. So therefore, we have this trail, and that is the trail, the old trail pointer. This was the bind, kind of the level where we started when trying the one alternative. Yeah. So this is these things, and then finally, there is also this backtrack point old. Once we are done, once we have exhausted all alternatives for this particular predicate, we have to go further up in our history, and then go to the earlier, to the next oldest backtrack point, and look for another alternative there. Yeah. So therefore, this. Okay, so does this make sense? Here perhaps we sometimes, in the implementation of instructions, we always will have to address these particular, the FP old, the HP old, the TP old, and so on. And here is kind of once again listed their relative addresses to the current frame pointer. But clearly, if I say I update the stack at position frame pointer minus 3, you perhaps will not associate that with a TP old. Yeah? So therefore, sometimes we might use these kind of these as abbreviations for the expression on the right. Okay. So now, okay. So that was kind of the vision, and now we have to gradually want to fill in the holes in our implementation. So there was at which place backtracking is initiated. This is our first question, and the place where backtracking is initiated is during unification, when this backtrack function is called. So you remember, I do unification of A and B. So they do not unify if A and B are atoms. And then backtrack is called. Now, what does backtrack do? Here is the implementation. Before we look at the implementation, we just kind of try to envision what we expect. So we expect that we go back to the backtrack point, which we keep hold of by means of the backtrack pointer. So we go there, we throw away everything which is on top of the stack since then, we undo all the, throw away the heap, we undo all the bindings which have been installed since then, and then we continue with the negative continuation address. Yeah, so that's the idea. So here is the implementation of this backtrack in this low-level way. We go back. The current stack frame now becomes the stack frame of the backtrack point. The heap pointer becomes the heap pointer, the old heap pointer. We undo all the bindings. So by heap pointer, setting the heap HP to HP old, we kind of pop up the heap. We kind of set the backtrack, the trail pointer to the old trail pointer. In the end, once we have undone all the bindings on the trail, which is by this reset. This reset, I think we have not yet fully explained, but we will explain it in a minute. And so having undone all the activity, all the actions, since we kind of reached the backtrack point the last time, we then kind of jump to the negative continuation address by setting the PC to the negative continuation cell. So that's it. Yeah. Just to highlight that one thing in the picture, here this is the negative continuation address. It goes into the PC. The backtrack, the frame pointer here is set to the value of the backtrack pointer and so on. Yeah? And here you see the old heap pointer goes into the heap pointer and the old trail pointer goes into the trail pointer. What?
How do I undo the stack?
You pop the stack.
Yeah, I have to pop the stack.
The stack will then be popped, yes. It depends on what is... Here you see the stack pointer is not changed, but that will happen when the next alternative is... this will happen as soon as we follow the negative continuation address. So undo the stack is not undone, it's just popped.
And when is the stack popped?
You will see. Okay, so now let us, before we kind of continue with what happens at the negative continuation address, we have not yet said what is going on there. So we try to envision what happens at the resetting. And I said resetting of the variable resetting of the variables. This only must be done for variables which are available after popping the heap. So these are the variables which have been created since the last backtrack point are removed together with their binding. So they are simply popped. We don't have to undo them. And so the only thing is when one has old variables, which are very old variables, which have been created before the backtrack point, and when they point to younger addresses, or when they are bound in any form, then these are recorded on the trail. So here you see what the trail does, what the function trail therefore does. So this function trail, recall, that was called whenever we set an unbound variable to, whenever we bind an unbound variable, and here you see what is going on. It compares the address, the address of the variable with the old heap pointer, and the old heap pointer is at position backtrack pointer -2. Backtrack pointer is the points to the last backtrack point, -2 is the old heap pointer. So these are the variables sitting down there, which are not undone by kind of popping. So therefore, these are the guys which we must reset when we do the backtracking. So therefore, these are recorded by trail. Backtrack pointer, what? The BP points to the topmost organizational cell of the last backtrack pointer. So here you see BP -2 is the old heap pointer. There. This was the heap pointer when the backtrack point was installed.
But then should we add 2 to the backtrack pointer?
No.
Because if we
subtract 2. We subtract 2.
Yeah, but could you go please to the...
So the backtrack pointer points... The backtrack pointer points to the topmost organizational cell of the backtrack point.
Ah, okay.
Yeah? So now what does the resetting do? The resetting gets... So that was the trailing. Now, what does the resetting do? The resetting is called with two addresses corresponding to the old trail pointer and the new trail and the current trail pointer, and then kind of undoes all the binding. Undoing all the bindings which are in between Y and X. So here it is so that kind of the one starts with the Y, so this is the higher address, and decrements it until one, as long as one is higher to X. So X is the last which remains on the which remains unreset. So, and for every such address on the trail, one kind of sets the corresponding the content of the reference pointed at by U to itself. You see, in the heap we write the reference and then the thing to itself. Whatever is in the on the trail you, whatever is whatever address is on the trail, we take it, we look it up in the heap, and we reset the reference there to a self-reference. Okay, so now is now we have kind of the key ingredients. We have what we do for the backtrack when the backtracking occurs. We have learned what happens when we do a binding, where we trail the bindings, and we have learned about the, how the bindings are undone. Now still we have to do the to invent the organization how to systematically check one alternative of the implementation of a predicate after the other. That is how to to realize that we try one clause defining a predicate after the other. So now that is so here is kind of the kind of formal setting. So here we have these clauses R1 to RF, where F is greater than 1, so there is more than one clause to try. And what would, and all these together define the predicate Q. And the predicate Q has, say, K arguments. Now, what do we have to do? So the first thing is, when we first encounter a call to Q, so we find a literal with Q, what do we have to do? So the first thing is we have to set the backtrack point. We have to install the organizational cells for this call to Q. Then we have successively try the alternatives. And then in the end we have to give up the backtrack point. That is, when we have exhausted the alternatives, we should not return to this backtrack point, but proceed with the earlier backtrack point. So here is the code. So here, the code for a predicate. So now it's not the code for a clause, but the code for all clauses together. So we kind of put together all the codes to for the individual clauses into some kind of frame. If you're not frame, frame is the wrong word, into a common organization, if you like, or into some we put some organizational code around the codes for the different clauses, so that the backtracking is correctly implemented, and that is done in the following way. Down here is the code for the clauses, so we need that to implement the predicate, and then we do the following. We first set the backtrack point, so we don't know how to do that, so we cannot do it with our current instructions. We invent a new one. So this is the set BTP. And then we try the first alternative. And when that fails, and so on, until we try second but last alternative. And that is, having done that, we then give up the backtrack point. That is, we delete the backtrack point in order to, so that means, and we delete the backtrack point and then jump to the last alternative. So this is, so if there's only one alternative, then we will never return to this particular stack frame. Yeah. So this means we give up the backtrack point has been removed. We will never come back to that. Because if that fails, then we have to go to an earlier backtrack point. If this succeeds, we are simply done with it. And we can give up the stack frame. Yeah?
Okay, so for each alternative, the negative continuation address is the next alternative?
That we will see, yes. And exactly this try thing has exactly this effect. So we do not know what this try means here. I will kind of implement it in a way so that we jump essentially to this A1 for the first year. We jump to the A1 and set the next address as the, or the, in this sense, the current PC, because the PC has already been incremented, as the negative continuation address. The positive continuation address, so here we simply jump to the A1, and the positive one is the one after the literal, which has been initialized at the when we mark the stack frame for a literal. There's we set the positive continuation address. So this here is the code, if you like, for the procedure. Okay, so now here are kind of again a lot. We are now a little bit familiar, or perhaps you are now familiar with my technique. I introduce some instructions here, like this one, and that one, without telling you for the moment how it is implemented. I postpone the implementation, but still, it is just a scheme for generating code. So we can generate code by means of that, and here it is. So here for that, we can use this kind of these placeholder instructions, if you like, to generate code for this little implementation of a predicate S. So this consists of two. You see, it consists of two clauses. So therefore, the implementation of the predicate S will first set a backtrack point, then try the first alternative starting at A, then delete the backtrack point, and then jump to the second alternative B. Yeah? And for the first alternative, there is starting at A, there is just the code for the first clause. And you see, the code for the first clause consists of pushing, so it's one local variable, so therefore push env 1, and it ends at pop env, and in between is the call, the translation of the literal t applied to x. And t applied to x, so this is like a call, so therefore we mark a stack frame for it, mark c, so c is the first address after the literal, so this is the positive continuation address, so this is stored here at the mark, then we kind of put the actual parameter, which is the x is not the first occurrence of the x, so therefore put ref 1, and then we call t. So this is as we did literals. Yeah. So this is the translation of the first clause, and for the second clause, I kind of undo all the kind of colors. Now for the second clause, so we jump to the second clause, because then once the first clause has failed, either the second clause succeeds or we are doomed. That is, we have to do a backtracking further up. So therefore, for the second clause, we again push. So there's an x equals a, one variable, so therefore push env 1, and then the unification code for x equals, so the implementation of the unification literal, unification goal, x equals a. So for that we push ref 1 to implement the left-hand side, and then we do the u atom a to unify with a. So that's it, and then we are done with that clause, and therefore comes the pop env. Okay. Now, once again, so perhaps you are curious how we would implement these instructions, these new instructions. So setting the backtrack point. So what does that mean? So setting the backtrack point means we have to store the current heap pointer and the current trail pointer and the current BP in the stack frame. So we put these three values into the corresponding area in our organizational memory cells. And furthermore, since now the current backtrack point is no longer deep in the stack, but the current stack frame is the current backtrack point, because no other backtrack point has been created on top of it. So this is the current backtrack point. So therefore, we set the BP to FP. That's it. So it was not so difficult, you see. It's in some sense what you expect. Now, trying. What does it mean, trying A? So essentially, that is what our little discussion, you kind of guessed what the trying should do. It should store the current PC as the negative continuation address, because we kind of have a sequence of tries, and this corresponds to the different alternatives. Yeah. So therefore, the current PC is put as the negative continuation address, while the A here is the address where we jump to. So therefore, it is put into the PC. Okay? So we could kind of, so here I made try a single argument instruction. I could also have made it a two argument instruction, kind of by recording as the second argument the address of the other, of the next alternative simply. But by that, since the PC contains already the next instructions, there's no point in doing so, and I have this individual try chain. And perhaps one more thing here, you see the try chain, and there's another thing here in this, for this last instruction, this for the alternative F minus 1, the next thing is not the address of the next clause, but the next instruction to execute before that is this del BTP. Yeah. So therefore, I kind of I found it convenient to give only one address as an argument to try. But this is a little bit a matter of choice, how you design your virtual machine instructions. I did it in this way. It is not a law of nature that you have to do so. You could have done it in a different way also. Okay, I did it this way. Now, what does del BTP means? Now, again, this is so if set BTP installs the backtrack point, now del BTP should kind of remove it. But what does that mean? Well, it simply means that we have to recover to replace the current backtrack pointer by the old backtrack pointer. Everything else we have to do no more, because we say this simply means we will never return in a negative, by when something fails, we will not return to this stack frame anymore. So therefore, the other values stored in there are not important. Okay, so that is kind of, one would say, you might kind of now wonder, is now the translation of Bullock complete? No, it is not. So at least for the implementation of clauses, we have still one open point, and that is this pop-env, which we have not yet discussed. So recall that what we do for a clause. So for a clause, we first... So our idea was first to allocate space for the locals, where the M is the total number of local variables, including the formals. And that is kind of, we make space for it by this push env instruction. Then comes the code for the goals on the right hand side of the clause. Okay. So this is what we would expect. And then in the end, we kind of placed this pop env. And I told you already, pop env aims at giving up the current stack frame. But as we have learned by this backtracking discussion, by the discussion of the implementation of backtracking, that we might not be able to give up the stack frame. For example, if the current stack frame is a backtrack point, then we cannot give up, when we kind of are done with the first clause, we cannot give up the stack frame, because we have still to try the other clauses. Okay? So therefore we can only, and this is one case. The other situation is, it could be that when proving goal G1, it might be that a backtrack point has been put on top of the stack, has been created. So then this stack frame for the G1 sits on top of the current stack frame. Now it contains a backtrack point. Now if we are at the end of, if we have reached this point here successfully, now all successfully, so we have reached this place, so then we cannot give up the current stack frame, because by that we would kick off also a backtrack point from the stack. And this is bad, because later on still some unification may fail, and we may have to return to the backtrack point which was sitting on the stack. So this means this popenv is not necessarily able to pop the stack. Yeah? In fact, it is only able to pop the stack if there's no backtrack point, so no extra garbage, if you like, on top of it. How can we identify that? So if there has a backtrack point been, is a still active backtrack point, is still sitting on the stack, then this means that the frame pointer So if all the goals in the body are definitely finished, where is it? Where is my green color? Here. If this is the case, then the current backtrack point can only be the current stack frame or sitting below. And now if it's the current stack frame, then the FP is equal to the BP. So that it means we can pop the stack if the frame pointer is less than the BP. If the BP is less than the frame pointer, then we can pop the stack. Yeah? So if the frame pointer exceeds the backtrack pointer, then we are sure that no backtrack point is sitting on top of the stack, and therefore there is no garbage, and therefore we can give up the current stack frame, and that is, in this case, popenv will pop the stack. Otherwise, if this is not the case, then we cannot pop the stack. That is, the stack pointer stays as it is, and simply the only thing what popenv can do is to continue with the positive continuation address and to return to the stack frame where the corresponding to the caller. So the PC is reset and the frame pointer is reset and no more. Yeah? And that means, and that kind of leads to the situation that we may arrive at that our current stack frame, with our current stack where we address the locals relative to the frame pointer, is not the topmost stack frame, but there are a lot of stack frames sitting on top of it. Yeah. So this is a situation which can occur when we implement a Prolog program. That is, the local stack where we do the unification or so can be arbitrarily far up in the stack, and the locals could be arbitrarily deep down in the stack. Yeah. So this is the situation. If the frame pointer is not greater than the backtrack pointer, then we only kind of reset the PC and the FP. Okay? So now we have implemented all kind of goals, that is unification and literals. We have implemented clauses, we have implemented predicates. The only thing now what remains to be done is to implement whole programs. And whole programs means now the series of predicate definitions followed by a query. Yeah, so here is a series of predicate definitions followed by a query. And how should this consist of? The first thing is, we need if the query could be wrong, so it could not be provable, in this case, we have to terminate and say no. So this is this no instruction, which we provide. Then we have to implement the literal G, and if it's a literal. It could also be, yeah. So if it's a literal, we simply implement this literal G. And besides that, we have to provide the code for the predicates defined by the sequences of clauses R, R, I. Okay. And in the very beginning, we have also initialization of the registers, and have to allocate space for the globals. What are globals here? So there are still, these are the variables occurring in G. Yeah, so if we ask, for example, is it the case that up x comma y is 1, 2? Yeah. So then the x and the y could be considered. These are variables for which we must allocate space, and that is the first thing which we have. We could consider these as globals, if you like. Because these are those which are exposed to the outside world. For these we have to allocate space, and then when evaluation of this query has terminated, we have to return the found values for x and y we have to expose these values to the user. And that is so this is the output produced by the program. So here, here is therefore the code for the whole program. It consists, as I said, of the code for the predicates. And beyond that, it is this one to deal with the query. So first we have to initialize something, and there we this initialization in particular needs the look, at least as I did it, it needs the address of it may also needs a negative continuation address, that is when the proving of the query fails. This is the A. And there we have this instruction no, which we say when which we output when proving of the query fails, and then program execution terminates. And then there is a positive thing, and this is this one here, to translate the query. We do it by pushing an environment consisting of all the which provides us with space for the variables, occurring in the literal, and followed by that comes this fabulous instruction halt, which we have to explain in a minute. So what does this halt, should it do? Halting means, okay, execution has terminated positively, we found a binding, and we return the bindings. Now it may also be, so if you kind of, at least in some prolog interpreters, once you have returned, once the prolog execution has terminated, you may kind of press the return in order to retrieve another binding. Yeah, this is kind of causing backtracking by the user. This is backtracking caused by the user. So hitting return then kind of hitting return means calling the function backtrack, and that let prolog try to find another alternative for proving the literal. And that we do until the things have terminated. Yeah. So now kind of once again, so what do we see here? What kind of placeholders we still have to fill in? So the first thing is this init, the halt, and the no. So these are the three things which we kind of have to come up with. What does init mean? So init sets kind of an initial stack frame. An initial stack frame within which the query is evaluated. So this kind of corresponds to an auxiliary, as if we had a kind of a virtual predicate, which is whose body is the query. So that in this way you could kind of understand this function init. And this A here is the negative continuation address, which we put here. This will be jumped to once, and this is a backtrack point. If the evaluation fails, and then one proceeds with A. Okay, so this is the init, and you see here now what kind of values are put into these auxiliary what is the HP old, what is TP old, and BP old. So BP old is undefined, so therefore it is -1. We will never use that. TP old is also not existing, so it's -1, and because nothing has been trailed so far, and the heap pointer is the current heap pointer is set to 0. So, but that is also kind of, so nothing is on the heap. I wonder why the C pointer is not -1. So maybe it could also be set to -1.
Well, it is nothing on the stack, so...
So nothing is nothing on the heap and nothing on the trail.
So the first address where I can put my next thing on the heap is...
Yes, but HP, does it point to the first... maybe it points to the first address where one can place something. Yeah, that's true. And the TP points to the...
To the position where I can put my next thing on the heap. And if there is nothing on the heap, I can put my next thing on the address 0.
Yes, so that's something. Probably this is the reason why it is 0. And so now, kind of, let's see what. The negative. Yes. Okay. So now comes the example where we have everything now in place. And so it's a full example now, so we have a predicate, a definition of several predicates, so the predicate T, the predicate P, the predicate Q and the predicate S and a query to P. So we would the whole program, translating the whole program, would start with an init thing, and N is the address of no. So here is the no. And in between we have, we kind of put an environment for the, we kind of create an environment for evaluating the query. So since the query does not contain a variable, so we push, and there's a push env zero. And then we mark the call for P, and we call P, and afterwards we kind of halt and return a zero number of variables. This is, in this case, the Prolog system would simply answer yes. And not the empty list of things, but yes, if it succeeds, and no, if it does not succeed. Now the implementation of T. Now T is a single, is a single clause predicate. So therefore, the implementation of T consists of the implementation of the clause. And the implementation of the clause consists in pushing the pushing one, since for the environment, as the clause consists has one variable only, and then comes the code for the body, and the body consists of a unification goal. X equals B, so we put ref 1, because X is the second occurrence of X, and then we do an U atom B, and then we have a pop env to finalize the code for this clause. Then comes the implementation of the predicate P. P again is a single clause predicate, so since therefore it consists of the implementation of the body of, so it has one variable, therefore push env 1, and it ends here at this pop env, and in between is the code for two literals, the literal Q, for the predicate Q, querying the predicate Q, and the one querying the predicate T. So these are in these two red boxes, and the first X is the first occurrence of this variable, and the second one is the second one. So therefore, put var 1 for the first actual parameter, and put ref 1 for the second actual parameter. And that's the implementation of P. Now Q again is a deterministic predicate, or just a single clause. So again we have, it starts at a push env and ends at a pop env, and push env 1 because it has a single variable only. And in between, again, we have this the implementation of the literal S of X, which is implemented here, since and the actual parameter is passed by put ref 1 because this is the second occurrence of X. Okay, so now comes the S. The S is a two clause predicate, and therefore comes here this we have to put this try chain. This try chain, so with setting the backtrack point, trying the first alternative, deleting the backtrack point, and jumping to the second alternative. And that was this the code of this predicate we have seen a few pages earlier. And the rest of the code for the two clauses then comes here. Here the first clause, and there the second clause. Okay? And that's it. So we have the code for the whole program. You see the code, in the end, the code is very well structured and not very difficult. But the program logic is quite involved, and it is kind of hidden in this try chain and in this is hidden in the dry chain, and actually this is the main point. And in the runtime functions like this trailing and resetting, which are called by which are called implicitly and are not kind of invoked explicitly here, so we don't see it in the code. Okay? So now that's kind of the basic, this is the basic scheme. We could stop here and quit Prolog, but it is in some sense here even more important to add optimizations. And in fact, the first virtual machine for Prolog, this was the WAM, Warren Abstract Machine. This was, I think it was the PhD thesis of Warren, and it came as a book, and it was kind of a quite popular book, and it was not a simple thing like this, but it is a full of insights and cute tricks to make the machine efficient. So there, in some sense, one could also say, from a didactical point of view, it mixes the basic principles, or it blurs the basic principles with all kinds of optimizations. And so the Warren Abstract Machine was also special in that sense, as it was not a plain abstract machine, as a virtual machine, as we have, I have shown you here, which is solely stack-based. But it is stack-based and comes also with a set of auxiliary registers which could be used for passing parameters and things like that, and doing unification there. And so if you have registers there, then you can try to make optimal use of these, reuse, and so there are many special cases. If there is only a single variable which is passed, or multiple variables, or there's aliasing between, and strange things, and there are a lot of shortcuts which you can do, and things become horribly complicated. And this we have all kind of abandoned by staying with the pure machine. But still, even if we are solely stack based, we can do and we must do certain optimizations in order to achieve a minimum of efficiency. And for functional languages, we found it, for example, important to have something which allows to achieve efficiency like a loop in a language which only has recursion. Now here in Prolog, it's even more severe. We do not even have, we have recursion, but we have no loops anyway. So how can we kind of create something like a loop, or introduce an optimization in a way that works as if we had a loop? And this is, so we look for something like a last call optimization. So that was very successful for functional languages, and we might wonder whether such a thing also exists here. And in fact, so this... sorry that I repeat myself so often, but this was the crucial, the nice thing with this last call optimization is, it is an optimization, yes, but it is a reliable optimization the programmer relies upon that the compiler will do it, and the compiler can easily identify it syntactically, so he knows when this optimization is applied. And so he knows how to trigger this optimization. So this is different from many other optimizations, which are so complicated and have so complicated preconditions that the programmer has only a vague idea. I might do this, I might try that, maybe it speeds up the program. But he does not know. But here he knows, and he insists upon that this should work. And so the compiler should provide it. So this is actually the good form of optimizations, which are so understandable that the programmer can trigger, can write his program in such a way that he knows this optimization will take place. So this is not the case in many, for many other things. So last calls. Now what is a last call? So let us look at an example. So let us look at our application append function. Now what should the what is the idea of the last call optimization? It is, for the last call we would like to reuse the stack frame of the caller. So that is the idea. So here is a last call. Yes, this is the last literal in the right hand side of a clause. So this is very simple, and last literal means not last literal and afterwards come unifications, but there come no unifications afterwards. It's really the last goal of the right hand side. So then we know we will not return to it, but there's a little catch. As I very verbosely try to explain, it is not necessarily the case that when we evaluate a clause that there are no other backtrack points on the stack. So we must kind of so it's not necessarily the case then that when we are at the last literal in the last goal of a clause that really the current stack frame is the topmost stack frame. If it's not this topmost stack frame, we cannot reuse it. Because if we allocate new locals, so there is a lot of, so we would have to squeeze them inside the stack, which is kind of cumbersome, and we would not like to do it. Yeah? So therefore, we only try to evaluate the last goal in the current stack frame. And if we succeed, if it is really if the current stack frame is on top of the stack, then we kind of will not, then we simply can pop off the, so we can pop off the stack frame directly and therefore will not return to this to the present stack frame anymore. So let us see here this such a clause. Here is a clause, and the GN is a literal. The last goal is a literal. The code as we would create it currently would look like as follows. We allocate the stack space for the locals, then we implement the goals, and so this is the code for the first first n minus one goals. Now I make explicit the code for the last goal. That is, here we mark another stack frame. We pass the parameter, create the actual parameters, and we call, and afterwards we pop the environment. And now what we do is, instead of creating a new stack frame by means of this mark, we do something special. So this is this last mark thing. So this last mark tries to reuse the current stack frame. And if this is possible, so this is this last marking, and if not, then a new stack frame is created. And here, calling, and then popping the environment. These are the two last instructions here. They are replaced by one single new instruction, which is this last call. And let us now see what this last mark and what this last call. How they should work. Yeah? So there is no popenv anymore, but there's a last call here. So what does last mark do? The last mark, so if the current clause is not last, or there are backstack points on the stack, that means that the frame pointer is at most BP. So there is the backtrack pointer is at least frame. It's equal to the current frame pointer or larger. In this case, lastMark must kind of create a new frame. But still, in this is special as in the positive continuation will not return to the caller because the caller is kind of is done, yeah. But there will kind of the positive continuation address is the PC old of the current stack frame, yeah. So what we have stored there, this is this 42. This is the positive continuation address of the caller. So this will be stored as the positive continuation address of the last call, and the FP old of the caller will be put as the FP old of the stack frame. This means if we positively succeed with the last goal, we will not return to the caller. So that is kind of a minimal optimization for this last for the stack frame of the last call. Yeah. So that is for the in case we cannot reuse the current stack frame. If the frame pointer is larger than the backtrack pointer, then we do not need a new stack frame, and therefore lastMark will do nothing. Because then we can reuse the current stack frame. Now, what does last call do? Again, we have to distinguish two cases. The first case is the sad case. The first case is the sad situation that we had installed a stack frame because there were backtrack points. This was identified by the fact that the frame pointer is less or equal to the backtrack pointer. And in this case, this last call behaves like a call. Otherwise, that is, if there is no backtrack point, so we have a last loss and there's no backtrack point on top of the stack, then the current stack frame is reused. How can we do it? Well, this means that we squeeze out the locals of the caller and move down the actual parameters of the last call down to the on top of the organizational cells. Yeah, and then we jump to the last call, and that's all. So that means here in this case, when the frame pointer is larger than the backtrack pointer, we move down the actual parameters of the current call, of the last call, m memory cells down. This is the move mh, and then we jump to the last code of the predicate of the last call. Okay. So we move, we squeeze out the m old locals, and that's it. And jump to the code of the last call. That's it. So the last call then behaves like a jump. So this move and a jump, and by that the stack is not increased. And here in particular now let us perhaps look at that kind of code here. So here you see this kind of code. if this alternative has failed and we have entered the second alternative, then there are goals. Here are two goals in front. But these goals are just unification goals. Unification goals will not leave backtrack points on top of the stack. So therefore, when we arrive here at the last call, then we are sure that no backtrack point has been is sitting on top of the stack. And not only that, we know there is this is the last clause, so there the current backtrack point is the current stack frame is not a backtrack point anymore, and therefore we are sure that this is a situation where we jump to the last call. That means this up function in fact behaves as like a loop. So now let us look at a more beyond that. Let us look at this more generic example. So here, assume this one, and here this A, the second A here is a last call. How would we translate it? So for the translation, it is very simple. So first we have variables x, y, and x1. So this puts an environment of 3, and then therefore we put n 3. Then we have the code for the first literal. This is this one, and put ref 1 for the x bar, and put var 3 for the x 1 because x 1 is the third variable. And therefore put var 3, we call f. So that f with two arguments. So that is the first thing, and now comes the last. For the last call, we have this last mark. We have the we put the arguments of the last call, which is this put ref 3 and put ref 2 for the two arguments, and then this last calling for the to call the A. And you see the last call A slash 2, 3, because the caller, which means the yellow clause, has 3 locals, which are squeezed out of the stack. Okay? Yeah. And like if we are in a situation where we are sure that this clause is the last one, and this last literal is the only one inside the last clause. That is like in the if here were not a T, but only a series of unification statements, then we are sure that this last literal will be jumped to, and therefore we can kind of replace this last marking with epsilon and replace this last calling with move m now this is strange because last call qh should be replaced with move h should be replaced with moving MH, and the jump PN should be jump QH. I have to jump to the last predicate and not to something else. What was your question? So A, the whole clause has 3 locals, X, Y, and X1. And these are the 3 locals of the caller, which are now obsolete and are replaced. So they are kind of no longer needed once the arguments of the last call have been constructed. And then therefore they are squeezed out. And then we have a little stack for the, in the old stack frame, we still have the local, we have the locals of A, which is the predicate of the last call. And we put then, make an, put env, push env, in order to adjust the locals of the collie. That is, but that is in the code of the last, of the clauses for the, for this last call. Okay? So, and now let's see for this putting, let us see for a realistic example now the code as a, as a kind of highlight, what we do for the up. And so here we see, this is the second, and by that last clause of the predicate up, we may count the locals, so this x, y, z, h, no, z, h, x prime, and z prime, which are 6. So therefore we have to push an environment of 6. And then we have to, then the code consists of two unifications which you have to provide. First the unification x equals h slash x prime. And this is, so now we have, so we put the reference, put ref1 for the x. Then it is, now it's a struct, structure term. So we have, need a uStruct for the cons constructor with a continuation, with a, this B thing. This is for the building block, the code of the building block. We have to navigate to the first sun where we find the h. H is the fourth variable, freshly occurring, so therefore u var 4. Then we go to the second argument, which is the x prime, which is the fifth variable, also fresh, so u var 5. Then we go up again, and C is the first address after the building block. Here comes the building block for the h slash x prime. So this means this is a put var x 4 put var x put var no put var 4 put var 5. Because these are first occurrences of these variables. Yeah, and note, these kind of are constructed because at that place they are not yet, they have not been encountered, and therefore we kind of, we put these variables, these uninitialized variables here, we put the struct for the constructor, and then we bind. That's for the building. And now the first address after the building is where we continue after the... We bind. Yeah. Actually, I wonder whether we have to put here an... a jump to the whether we have no. Okay, so that's fine. Now at starting at C comes the unification, the next unification expression, namely this one, the code for that. That starts at C, and again we have to kind of we put the reference for Z. Z is the second the second occurrence of this variable, and it's the third variable, therefore put ref 3. And then we unify it with h slash z prime. Now that is, again, a we have to create the unification code. We have a uStruct. We have a uStruct for the list constructor, where d is the start address of the building code for that. Then we proceed to the first sun. And now the H is definitely the second occurrence of H, therefore uref 4. Then we proceed to the second sun, where we find the set prime. Set prime is fresh, therefore u var 6. Then we go up, and E is the continuation where we proceed, and that is for the code for the literal. And starting from D is the building code, and I kind of so the building code here consists of these instructions, and you see here we have to check, do an occur check, and we do an occur check only for that variable occurring in the term which is already initialized. And the only variable here which is already initialized in this term is the H. And therefore we have a check of check 4 to check the H. You see? And in the other building block did not need this checking because H as well as X prime was fresh there. Okay. So now comes the E. That is the most fancy thing. This is the last call, and I kind of already skipped this instruction last mark. Why? Because there's only unification to the left, and it's the last clause. So therefore, there's only the sequence of code to create the arguments, the X prime, the Y, and the Z prime. X prime, Y prime and Z prime all are kind of not already initialized. Therefore, put ref 5, put ref 2, and put ref 6 to put these actual parameters. And then we move them 4 steps down. This is move for 3. And then there ultimately we jump to the code of the predicate in the last literal, which is we jump to app 3. Okay? So you see here, in this code does no longer contain any calls, only jumps. So it's just a call. It's just a loop. So that's kind of the most important optimization. We will now encounter 2 more optimizations. The next one is kind of a little bit harmless, and one might not consider it as too valuable, but people like it. And then the next one then will be clause indexing, which is kind of the second most important optimization, which we should discuss here. So trimming of stack frames. So what does that mean? So this is, in some sense, well, the idea is interesting, although I'm not completely sure how effective that really is in practice. And the point is that stack frame, stack space is valuable. And as Prolog is not always able to pop the stack, one should use every possibility to squeeze out unnecessary data, to squeeze that out of the stack. And that means this trimming of stack frames. And so the idea is that one orders the locals, so locals can be besides the formals, the remaining locals can kind of be ordered according to their life ranges. So it could be that there's a local X which only serves for communicating information from the first literal to the next literal, and then is no longer needed. And that one might wonder that this local variable, which has only a limited purpose or a limited life range, could, after its last use, could be squeezed out of the stack. That would be the idea. So let us, in order to make it more concrete, consider this particular clause. So here, what do we see? So we see there are variables X and Z as formals. So clearly, their life range is arbitrarily long. Yeah, so you will not be able to pop them, because there could be another clause, for example, afterwards, which may make use of it. So you could pop these kind of the formals only if you are sure that you are in the last clause, that you will not return to the stack. Okay. Beyond that, you kind of now in this within this clause, what we find here that this x 1 occurs here for the first time, and here for the last time, and this x 2. Occurs here for the first time and there for the last time. So after and x 3 is here twice. So they serve for propagating information. Such kind of clauses occur, for example, when you kind of do graph reachability, and here 5-step graph reachability, for example, then you would have clauses like that. Here in particular, this means that the x1 is that from that point on. And that means after P2 has been successfully proven, we don't need x1 anymore and we could pop it. It is not required for proving P3 or P4. Yeah, and there's the same holds true for p variable x2, which is dead after p3, and we could pop it there. So now that is done by the instruction trim. So trimming does the following: popping a local means I kind of put the stack. So there are two possibilities how I could do it. One possibility would be kind of the simplest way is I put this as pop the stack, decrease the stack pointer. But that only works if there are no backtrack points on top of stacked on top of the locus, because then you cannot simply decrement the stack pointer. So therefore, this trimming is a kind of a best effort trimming, if you like. So we first have to check whether the frame pointer is at least as big as the backtrack pointer. So the current stack frame could be a backtrack point. That doesn't matter. But there should be no backtrack point on top of the current stack frame. That is, the backtrack pointer should not exceed the frame pointer. So that condition we might check. And if this is the case, then we could trim. That is, we set the stack pointer to frame pointer plus m. The m is the kind of the number of locals which remain after popping. Okay, so that's the idea. Very simple. And so here in this particular example, we could kind of place after. So here is the again. We push the environment 5 variables we have. And we kind of have here the code for the first literal, calling P1/2. Then we have the code for the second literal, calling P2/2. And afterwards, if we have ordered the variables appropriately, and ordering the variables appropriately means that we kind of put the one with the give the one with the shortest life range, the x2, the highest number. So this is, the x1 is on top of this, is the last local. This is the one which we first deallocate by trimming to 4. Yeah? So trim 4 will pop the local with the highest relative address, in this case, the x1. And now, again, after the next literal, we may decide to pop off x2. And that we do by setting, since that has relative address 4, we therefore trim, can pop that off by trimming to 3. That's it. And now you see here, this is, again, the code for the last call. By doing this last marking, last calling P4/2, and for the putting the locals X3 and set by putref 3 and putref 2 according to the relative addresses assigned to set and X3. Okay, you got the principle and the idea? So I kind of, this is the idea, and I did not formalize it to the very end, so because for that we would have to define pre-formally what is the life range and how it does the code generation scheme look, is constructed to make use of this life ranges. But I guess this is a formalization which is a little bit boring and on the sad side, and therefore I kind of skipped it. I trimmed, so to speak, this exposition in that respect. Instead, I would like to be more, a little bit more precise. Well, that was precise, but it was not fully detailed. But now I would like to make a more elaborated exposition of clause indexing, because this is an extremely important thing. So what does that mean? So, In C, we had switches. So we liked them because this was this constant time selection of alternatives. In functional languages, we had this pattern matching. And at least in the tutorial and in the exercises, in the assignments, you discussed that you can use, and I think I mentioned it at least, that you can translate multi-constructor data types into jump tables, so that you can do the case distinction between the multiple constructors in constant time. And this is extremely important and useful. And that we would like to have here also. And that means that if the programmer used a programming style where he does a case distinction on the topmost, it has multiple clauses, yes, but these multiple clauses refer to the first argument, and to the topmost are distinguished according to the topmost constructor of the first argument. So in that case, we could kind of. We would like to support that by allowing, so to by providing the facility to allow to inspect the topmost constructor of one of the arguments, and we kind of insist that to be the first argument. And then when we see that there is an empty list, then we know only the clause where an empty list is possible there is a possible choice, and there is no other alternative. And that makes two things. First, we kind of select the alternative more quickly. And the second thing is we remove the requirement for backtracking, because we look at the constructor and we see, it is the fifth clause. So go. So that's it. We jump to the fifth clause. Because if the topmost constructor is not the empty list, then this will not match anyway. So we have to do something else. So we find more determinism in the clauses. And backtracking, we liked it because we were able to implement it, but backtracking is expensive. And so we try to avoid backtracking whenever possible. And this clause indexing allows us to avoid backtracking. And therefore, this is good. And therefore, any decent implementation of Prolog has to provide such kind of clause indexing to minimize the amount of backtracking. So that if the programmer uses a style where essentially by such pattern matching things, the program behaves in essence deterministically, then the implementation should be fast. And that then there would be no backtracking, no backtrack points. We always can pop the stack, and everything is on the good side, and we should have no punishment at all for using Prolog. And that is the idea why this clause indexing is so important. And then using also these last calls, then you effectively get something which is competitive, and you do not pay a price for using Prolog. So that's the goal. But how precisely? this clause indexing works, we will look at tomorrow. For today, thank you for your attention and have a nice day. Thank you.